No one wants his or her life to end meaninglessly. And that is certainly what happens if there is no life after death or final judgment.
International human rights attorney Dr. John Warwick Montgomery talking about his presentation at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Religions other than Christianity provide no assurance in this regard. The resurrection of Jesus Christ is at the very heart of Christianity and is the most compelling reason to believe the claims of Christ to be God come to earth for the salvation of mankind. The evidence for the resurrection is so powerful that it would stand up in any court of law.
You can meet and hear Dr. John Warwick Montgomery making a legal case for the resurrection of Christ at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. You'll find a conference schedule and you can register at issuesetc.org.
Gender studies isn't even close enough to science to catch its cold. I mean, they're two very different things, and never the twain shall meet.
They survive with an abortion-centered business model. They cannot thrive, and they can't move into the future if they stop doing abortions, which is what we've said all along. Stop doing abortions, and our argument is over.
He went away sad. That's not a bad thing. Jesus was the master catechist, and we don't say he did a bad job because the man wasn't converted. Well, Jesus was faithful.
Dr. Connors, are you Lutheran?
Yes, I am a Lutheran, but please, call me Frank.
When driving to and from work through the Las Vegas Valley and Den of Iniquity, I always hit the jackpot by listening to Issues Etc.
There is a piece in the New York Times recently titled "The Latest Attack on Islam, It's Not a Religion," subtitled "Too Many Americans Would Deny Muslims the Religious Liberty They Insist Upon for Christians." It is sounding an alarm, or attempting to sound an alarm, about religious liberty for Muslims. But the question remains, is Islam only a religion? Is it also something else? There are those who argue that it isn't a religion at all. It's a political system masquerading as a religion. Is that true as well? We'll be responding to this New York Times column with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery. Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. After our conversation with Dr. Montgomery, Pastor Peter Bender joins us to continue our conversation on the confirmation and First Communion rites that we began several days ago with him in our series on Lutheran catechesis. Feel free to join us with questions or comments. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE. Our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Our Twitter address, @issuesetc. And the Issues Etc. listener comment line, 618-223-8382. Joining us to respond to a New York Times column titled "The Latest Attack on Islam, It's Not a Religion," Dr. John Warwick Montgomery, a regular guest, emeritus professor at the University of Bedfordshire in England, a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, and a member of the bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He's professor at large with 1517 The Legacy Project, director of the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights, and author and editor of more than 50 books, including Be Ready Always. Dr. Montgomery, welcome back.
Thank you.
The argument that the New York Times column introduces to us is that some are arguing that Islam is not, in fact, a religion, but a political system masquerading as a religion. Is there any merit to that observation?
Well, not really. What they've done is to turn a both-and into an either-or. They've said that Islam, being politically orientated, can't be a religion. And this is nonsense, of course. Islam is one of the great historic religions of the world. The reason that they're doing this, of course, is to try to eliminate Sharia law proposals and other Muslim activities in the United States. They've always run into difficulty in doing this because of the First Amendment. The way to handle it, in their view, is not to regard Islam is a religion at all. And if it isn't a religion, of course, it isn't protected by the First Amendment, either federally or in the states. Well, we can certainly understand they're wanting to limit Muslim activity, but this is not the way to do it. There's no way in the world that you can argue that Islam is not a religion. Sure it is. There is a way of doing this. It's much more difficult, but in my experience, Christians usually want to take the easy way out, and they particularly don't want to engage in anything that would involve too much intellectual analysis.
What is the proper way to sort this out with respect to Islam, to affirm both that it qualifies as a religion and that there are legitimate concerns about its imposition of its religious and political sensibilities in a free Western society?
Well, I've set forth the argument in my book, Defending the Gospel in Legal Style. This is an essay that deals with techniques for limiting Muslim terrorist immigration. And it's interesting that this article was, first of all, offered for publication in England, and on political correctness grounds, publication was refused. It was subsequently published, the very same article, in Germany, in a book of my essays. The proper approach to this is to say, yes, Islam is a religion, but it's a religion with precepts that are so obnoxious that the religious activity of Muslims should be radically limited, and Muslim immigration should be controlled in a draconian fashion. The problem is not that Islam isn't a religion. The problem is that it is a bad religion. But of course, people don't want to say this, because if they say this, they're going to be considered intolerant. This is non-politically correct. The subtitle of my article is A Non-Politically Correct Approach to This Issue.
Okay. Make your case there with some particular examples that there are tenets of Islam that are obnoxious to Western freedoms and sensibilities.
Yes. Well, the various provisions of Sharia law that have to do with women, the woman is regarded as a second-class person in Islam. You know, in Saudi Arabia, women have never been allowed to drive automobiles, for goodness sake, to say nothing about their status in other respects. A Muslim male can divorce his wife simply by announcing this in the presence of a couple of witnesses, and she is thrown out with nothing. Now, this has been modified, of course, by statute in a number of Muslim countries, but the woman was not allowed to do this at all. And, you know, it's strange also that the Muslim garb for women that covers the entire structure of said female, this is entirely unnecessary in Muslim countries, because the women can't go outside and do anything constructive, so they stay at home and they eat, and therefore they become obese, and the only value of the Muslim dress is so that you don't have to look at really ugly females. But these are simply examples, all right? The position of Islam on apostasy. There is a guarantee of the right to change one's religion in the United Nations Civil and Political Covenant, in the European Convention on Human Rights, in Sharia law, of course. If you change from Islam to something else, this is apostasy, and the death penalty is carried in a number of Muslim countries if you make that mistake. Pakistan, for example, this kind of thing is absolutely frightening. The fact of the matter is that this religion happens to be a totalitarian religion, which, if it gets control in a country, heaven help, literally, anybody who isn't Muslim. And that's been true through Muslim history. It's true that under the Ottomans, under some Ottomans, the Jews and the Christians were allowed to function, but they had to pay taxes that the Muslims didn't have to pay, and these were crushing. The whole thing is an effort to force everybody, by sword or by political action, into the Muslim faith. Now, if a religion has sufficiently obnoxious characteristics, it should be possible to limit the activities of that religion only to those believers who will disavow those particular premises. That's the subject of my article. And here are a couple of examples, all right? I'm reading from the article. The immigration authorities of a Western nation are confronted with the application of Monsieur Saveur Bon Appétit, a native of Fiji. He is the chief priest of a native Fijian religion, cosmic anthropophagy, and wishes to lead many of his followers to the West. This religion, in accord with ancient custom and practice, believes in eating one's neighbor on ritual occasions, thereby absorbing a greater portion of the world soul, of which each individual represents a segment. Monsieur Bon Appétit is widely read and frequently cites Michel de Montaigne's essay on cannibalism, in which Montaigne praises cannibal society and asserts, everyone gives the title of barbarism to everything that is not in his own country. All right, second example. The same immigration authorities must also deal with the application of Judas Iscariot Zabotec. This gentleman, a Mexican citizen, is archpriest of a religious revival of ancient Mesoamerican Aztec belief, Aztecs Redivivi, and hopes to be the first of many co-believers to immigrate to Western countries in need of new spirituality. For Zabotec and his followers, as with their ancestors, the gods once sacrificed themselves, so we must likewise engage in ritual human sacrifice. Yes, ongoing sacrifice sustains the universe. Everything is tenacayote, spiritual fleshhood on earth. He points out with particular pride to the 10 to 80,000 sacrifices at the reconsecration of the Great Pyramid of Tenochtitlan in 1487. Right. Now, having described, and by the way, these examples are nicely footnoted to historical sources. After giving these, I asked the question, what would the immigration authorities do in a case like this? Well, they might absolutely refuse anybody having any connections with either of these two notions, either human sacrifice or cannibalism, from entering the United States. But they probably would take a lesser position and require anybody from those backgrounds complete a detailed questionnaire and pledge not to practice any of this stuff if they were allowed into the country. And if that were done with criminal penalties for lying and good investigation, that could certainly reduce the number of cannibals and the like that would be coming in. Now, I use these examples because these are obnoxious religions, really obnoxious religions. They are against the social fabric. It seems to me that Islam falls into exactly that same category. And if that's the case, then it, on the basis of the public weal, on the basis of maintaining public order and decency, it is possible to limit the activities, even though they are also religious activities. The First Amendment doesn't guarantee the right to be a cannibal. And why? Because of the Christian tradition. We love our neighbors rather than eating them.
Dr. John Warwick Montgomery is our guest. We'll have a few more minutes with him on the other side of the break. We're responding to a New York Times column titled, The Latest Attack on Islam, It's Not a Religion. So, is this practical? Or someone might also object, well, my Muslim neighbor doesn't seem obnoxious at all to me. How does that fit within this conversation? We'll answer those questions with Dr. John Warwick Montgomery right after this.
historian's ideological bias distorts or ignores evidence from the past, a bad kind of revisionism emerges.
Dr. Mark Kaltoff of Hillsdale College, talking about his presentation at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
It masquerades as honest history. Such revisionism needs to be exposed and dismantled. It undermines proper understanding of our world. It has been said those who do not remember the past are condemned to repeat it. In this case, failure to expose bad revisionism means that those who do not know the past are condemned to suffer at the hands of biased ideologues who claim they do.
You can meet and hear Dr. Mark Kaltoff making the case against revisionist history at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
LCMS Rural and Small Town Mission exists to support and encourage congregations in rural and small town settings. In partnership with LCMS districts, RSTM is uniquely positioned to make a major impact in revitalization support, community engagement and outreach training, congregational partnership development, and worker support through providing and developing resources geared specifically to rural and small town congregations. Check us out at lcms.org/RSTM or give us a call at our office. We're here to help.
The Lord is our shepherd, and we are the people of his pasture. Why then do we still suffer in this life? Disease, loneliness, persecution. I'm Katie Schuerman, and I'm collaborating with Cheryl Swope, Molly Hemingway, and a host of literary friends in He Restores My Soul, a book that takes an honest look at hardship and heartache in light of God's promises found in his word. He Restores My Soul is now available at emmanuelpress.us. emmanuelpress.us.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're responding to a New York Times column titled The Latest Attack on Islam, It's Not a Religion. Dr. John Wark Montgomery is our guest, emeritus professor at the University of Bedfordshire in England, a French advocate, a barrister at law in England and Wales, and a member of the bar of the Supreme Court of the United States. He's professor at large with 1517 The Legacy Project, director of the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights. You can also meet and hear Dr. Montgomery making the legal case for the resurrection of Christ at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Dallas, Texas. Attendance is limited to 400. Child care is free, courtesy of Wittenberg Academy, and online classical Lutheran school. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. Making the Case Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas. Dr. Montgomery, how would you respond to someone who says, look, I understand what you're saying about Sharia law, but my Muslim neighbor is hardly obnoxious. I don't get any sense of this kind of totalitarian Sharia law coming from him.
Well, that may well be the case, but the issue has to do with the fundamental principles of Islam, and not with whether a follower of Islam necessarily understands these or goes all the way with them. It's very interesting to see that in Muslim countries, this totalitarianism, as I've described it, falls upon everybody. And the Muslims are hardly attempting to increase religious liberty, exactly the opposite. And when these countries ratify international human rights conventions, they always qualify their subscription by saying that, of course, if Sharia law disagrees with anything in the convention or treaty, then we reserve the right to follow Sharia law and not what the convention says. So that simply eliminates the force of the convention in those countries. That's why countries like Saudi Arabia and Pakistan are technically subscribing members of an international human rights system. Sure, the next door neighbor within a Western free society enjoys all of its benefits, but given half the chance, the Muslims who know their religion will try to push it in the direction of the Muslim countries. One example of this, quite recent, is the case that went before the European Court of Human Rights, where a Muslim in Switzerland insisted that his elementary school child have a separate swimming opportunity in school, in the athletics program, which would not require her to be present in a swimming pool with boys. All right. And he said that throughout Switzerland, there needed to be separate facilities, separate elementary school facilities for children. Now, the court said this is definitely a religious viewpoint. Even though the Quran doesn't require this for any child before puberty. Nevertheless, the fact of the matter is that this fellow was pushing for this. He took it through all of the courts of Switzerland and lost, of course. And then he went to the European Court of Human Rights. The court said, yes, it's a religious opinion, but the fact of the matter is that religious activity is not something that cannot be qualified. And the European Convention on Human Rights, Article 9, provides a qualification. It says religious freedom should be maintained, of course, but only if it is not destructive of the social order. And on that basis, they said, he's going to lose. He's going to lose. Why? Because were we to approve this, all the way through Switzerland, they would have to provide separate gym facilities for little kiddies. This is ridiculous. This is putting a burden on the society that the society certainly should not have to bear. Look, in the case of Christians, let's say we have an alleged Christian. This is a person who's a member of some church. The fact of the matter is that he favors homosexuality. He's always hooping it up outside of marriage, et cetera, et cetera. To cite an example like this doesn't condemn Christianity, all right? It condemns that individual. And if you have a sweetness and light Muslim who is certainly not going to do any of the ghastly things that Muslim law requires, this fellow is a bad Muslim, okay? And so you don't use him in order to justify Muslim belief in general. You've got to look at the official technical beliefs of the religion to determine if the religion should be allowed to function in a civilized society. The thing is that in the U.S. at the present time and in other Western countries, people are frightened witless of being labeled discriminatory. Okay, everybody wants to be politically correct, and therefore nobody wants to face what Islam actually teaches. But I'm telling you, the only way to deal with the problem of Islam is to face what it actually believes and practices. And if one does face this, then one has a sufficient argument within the social order to stop the activity. And the fact that it's a religion doesn't give it carte blanche, for goodness sake, to do anything that it wants to.
Dr. John Warren Montgomery is emeritus professor at the University of Bedfordshire in England, a French advocate and a barrister at law in England and Wales, member of the bar of the Supreme Court of the United States, professor at large with 1517, the Legacy Project, director of the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights. You can purchase his books and find out more about the International Academy of Apologetics, Evangelism, and Human Rights at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Montgomery, it's always a pleasure. Thank you.
You're most welcome.
On the other side of the break, we're going to continue a conversation that we began several days ago with Pastor Peter Bender on confirmation rites, First Communion rites, the liturgy, ritual, and the ceremony that has grown up in the church around these things. Why? And what do they end up looking like? Is there a connection, for instance, between the rite of baptism and the church's traditional rite of confirmation? We'll answer all those questions with Pastor Peter Bender after this. Can you remain a Christian if you stay away from church on Sunday mornings? I've written a column in the latest issues, etc. journal titled, Why Do You Go to Church? We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Dr. Mark Seifried writes about his journey from being a Baptist seminary professor to becoming a Lutheran seminary professor. It's the free online Issues, etc. journal, issuesetc.org.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's Classical Christian Curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Do you find yourself fixing the theology on store-bought greeting cards when you give them to friends and family? Put away that Sharpie. Edgruesome.com has greeting cards, art, jewelry, certificates, church banners, housewares, and all sorts of fantastic gifts that proclaim Christ crucified for us. Whether you're a value shopper or a collector, you'll find something at Edgruesome.com. That's ADCRUCEM.com.
St. Jacobi Lutheran Church in Shawnee, Wisconsin has a special guest each and every week. It isn't you, but it is Jesus Christ. He is a guest, and he is also the one who comes to serve you with his preached word and his broken body and shed blood. You are invited to be served by Jesus on Saturday evening at 6:30 and Sunday morning at 9 a.m. Visit www.stjakobi.org for more information.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Come and experience firsthand by sitting down in classes and actually hearing professors, coming to chapel, which is always the high point of the day, to hear the Word of God and to lift our voices in song.
Issues, Etc. regular guest Dr. Paul Grimm on why you should consider visiting Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Spend time talking to professors. I mean, there's not a professor here who will not be willing to take time, whether it's after chapel during the coffee hour or just to come into one study and sit down and talk for a while, to answer questions, to help them to get a sense of, A, do they want to be a pastor or a deaconess? And then B, is this the right place? And, well, maybe C would be the question, is now the right time for them to make that decision?
If you've contemplated the vocation of pastor or deaconess, contact Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155, or send an email to admission@ctsfw.edu.